It's Femi Okay and John Hockenberry taking care of you this morning. John, you're an author.
Yeah.
Let me give you a pitch, okay?
Okay, I don't have a lot of time. Quick.
Once upon a time, the smartest, richest people in the world and all of their charitable foundations got roped into a secret $1 billion financial scam that spanned the globe. Too over the top?
Okay. No.
All right, so it involved leaders of industry,
I'm with you.
Entertainment, one of the world's oldest religions.
Whoa.
At the center. Soft-spoken, anonymous man whose principal talent is boring people. Oh, too harsh? Maybe too harsh.
Interesting.
A free-spending wife, mistress, got to have a mistress, and all brought down in the end. There's even a connection to the Holocaust.
I love it.
Is Bernie Madoff time in the publishing world? Okay, so we have 5 books. We're counting. A 6th book hits the stores today.
Madoff has everything.
Okay. Vanity Fair magazine might as well be called Madoff magazine. It seems to have nearly given itself over to the scandal. Joining us this morning, Motoko Rich. She covers the book publishing industry for our partner, The New York Times. We also have author and journalist Erin Arevedlund, whose book, Too Good to Be True, The Rise and Fall of Bernie Madoff, was released just this month. Motoko, first of all, starting with you, from a publisher's standpoint, how deep is the Madoff gold mine?
Well, it's probably not $65 billion.
that's safe.
Safe to say. But they're probably, you know, they're capitalizing on this enormous interest and this racy tale that you outlined. But who knows? The book publishing is in fairly dire straits, just like a lot of other retailers, and they're not getting as many people walking into bookstores, and there's competition from all kinds of other entertainment. That being said, if they see something that they think might get people to buy books, they're going to jump on the topic, and this is fairly irresistible, and that's why there are so many books. On the other hand, this is something that publishing often does, which is too many of them jump on the same wagon.
What's the window of interest for Madoff books and Madoff stories? When do you think people get tired of reading about him?
Well, it depends, really. I mean, I think the publishers made this bet that they were going to get tired sooner rather than later, which is why a lot of them moved up some publication dates. That being said, there are a couple that are still coming, including one from my colleague Diana Enriquez, and the story seems to still be unraveling. We're still learning things, like the fact that this chief financial officer for a charity and personal investor herself, Sherry Weinstein, had an affair with him. So obviously that was a revelation that came in a book, but there's still stuff happening.
Let me just bring in Erin Arevedlund, whose book Too Good to Be True. It still smells new. Erin, you started writing about Madoff a long time ago, back in 2001. What was your first impression of him?
He was very affable. He didn't tell me a heck of a lot, and you know, he wanted me, like everyone else, to just go away and not ask any questions.
So back in December 2008, that was when we first learned that Madoff was under house arrest, got to start getting a few of the details of the Ponzi scheme. And your book came out just a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. How did you work out the actual timeline for writing the book? How quickly could you put all of that material together?
Well, initially it was supposed to come out at the end of the year. And then we moved up the publication date to the fall and then found out that I think another book was coming out in August, so we decided the manuscript was close to being ready and decided to just go with it.
And you consider yourself a bit of a Madoff historian.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah. Why?
That is very sad. Madoff historian, Erin Arevedlund.
In many ways.
How did you get to be in that position?
I wrote a story for Barron's magazine back in 2001, just questioning the consistency of his returns. They seemed manufactured. He never lost money in any year, and he was supposedly running one of the biggest hedge funds on Wall Street, but insisted that his investors not tell anyone.
You know, Motoko, it seems to me that the books are just the beginning here on some level, that part of what drives this, and again, we don't know what the book sales are going to be, but it seems to me you've got stories of the victims, you've got stories of the perpetrators, you've got Elie Wiesel, it seems to me, could do his own sort of personal memoir of being bilked and probably get another Nobel Prize, you know what I mean?
Right, and there's the government side, and you know, there seems to be continuing fallout among others who are being charged with various crimes, and what happens to the wife and the family. I mean, yes, there's endless interest, and then, of course, there are the movie opportunities, which then turn into movie tie-in editions for the books.
Erin Arevedlund, your book, Too Good to Be True, The Rise and Fall of Bernie Madoff, you've read some of the other books, the other competition out there. What do you think of them?
I've only read a little bit of Andrew Kurtzman's book. I haven't read any of the others. And I'm actually looking forward mostly to Harry Markopoulos' book, which is due out, I think, early next year. He's the whistleblower.
He was at the Securities and Exchange Commission, right?
No, he was sending letters
to the Securities
to
and Exchange,
the Securities and Exchange Commission.
And yeah, he was profiled on 60 Minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Motoko Rich, book editors who saw that 60 Minutes piece on the whistleblower probably were on the phone with him the next morning, right? I mean, you're a New York Times reporter covering the book publishing industry. That's how it works, right?
Often, yes. I mean, sometimes those 60 Minutes interviews are tethered to a forthcoming book as well. But yes, absolutely. You know, something happens and then agents are running to find out if somebody wants to write a book and book publishers are competing and vying. And I don't actually know the history of this particular book, whether or not he got a lot of money for it. But often people can get, you know, six figures, seven figures to write a book like this.
What about Bernie?
I don't know if you're allowed to make money while you're in prison, so I don't know what the book deal would be for that, but presumably if he wanted to write something, people would be interested in hear what he had to say.
He'd need enough money to keep him going for 150 years. Motoko Rich, New York Times reporter who covers the book publishing industry for our partner, the New York Times, thank you very much for joining us this morning. And Erin Arvindland, she's the author of Too Good to Be True, The Rise and Fall of Bernie Madoff. Good luck with your book, Erin.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.